Hello and welcome to School of Batman Live. I'm Dr. Matthew Partridge. I'm a research fellow from down at Southampton University. The Batman next to me is the wonderful
Chris Blumsden. Hello everyone. I'm not a doctor. I do have two GCSEs though, thank you very much. And a very genuine Batman cape, which I found as a curtain backstage before I came on. Hope you appreciate the effort we go to here, no expense spared. So yes, thank you all for coming to this wonderful science Batman show. And I think we're all here because we are fans of Batman and also fans of science, right? Are we all fans of science?
Yeah.
Yes, very good. So let's talk about some of the great scientists through the years. Who are some of your favourite scientists? Let's have some shout-outs.
Michael Faraday,
that's a good start. Okay, you're wrong, but keep going. Who's the best scientist? Newton is good. They're getting that wrong.
Einstein.
Eric Schrodinger's wrong. Okay.
Joseph Priestley.
Okay.
Jesus.
They're all
Jesus. That's a controversial one.
Yeah, it's an afternoon show, so no religion, folks. No, they're all great answers, but they're all wrong because, of course, the greatest scientist is Batman. And we are here over the next hour to prove that to you because, you know, a scientist is defined as someone who's got expert knowledge in one or more areas of the natural and physical sciences. And there's been no scientist throughout history who's had to have such a breadth of expertise as Batman. So I've been a fan of Batman across all the mediums, the comics, the TV shows, and of course the films. And Batman is the greatest superhero.
He is the greatest superhero. Chris, don't have to go to the audience.
Sorry. Right. Yeah, you're of course the real heroes. But the people sitting in the front rows who are the genuine heroes, you'll actually find some heroes chocolates under your seats if you want a heroes chocolate. So, oh yeah. Chocolates. This is bribery, I know. Hopefully you enjoy.
It is bribery to be brave people who have sit in the front row of an interactive show.
So we're saying Batman, we're gonna talk about the Batman film. So there's been six actors who have portrayed Batman across the films. We're gonna ignore the kind of 43 and 49 Batman films, they were serials. No one's really seen them anyway. So we're going to talk about six actors, and of course there's no way really to prove who the best Batman of those six actors was.
I think we do need to spend time. Clearly the audience have opinions on this already.
Okay.
I think we need to take a bit of time with the audience to choose the best actors.
The best Batman actor. Is this our official scientific method as a doctor?
This will be the most scientific test we have ever done.
Okay, so we're going to do some official science live in front of you. This is not a drill. We need three volunteers. So we're after one. You say you look like you're a fantastic volunteer. So you'd like to step on stage. I think that's a first. So big round of applause for the first volunteer. We need two more. If you could just stand up. I mean, I think you said you're definitely second. Well done. And a final, madam. Let me tell you, we have a fine. Okay, so we're going to ask you for a you have to anonymize when you do science. This is called a double blind anonymized trial. It's very important that everybody wears a cowl.
And holds bits of paper, which is all scientists.
Yeah,
you're
going to need two hands, man, in the show. I'll try and fix that. So we have the six Batman actors here. For those of you who are not massive Batman fans, Matt's going to explain to you which actor is which.
Oh dear God, I'm a scientist. I mostly tell you how we could make Batman.
Okay, I'll do the Batman.
No, it's fine. We have the lovely
Keaton.
There we go. And
then we have Keaton, and then we have a Bat-El, Christian Bale. We have the lovely Val Kilmer. Oh yes. And then we have Adam West, everyone. Okay, I think we know where Adam West is going to come. Okay,
so we have the Grim Batfleck.
The Grim Batfleck. Yes.
And this one we will just refer to as Batniffles.
Batniffles.
So we don't need to dignify this with an actor.
For the people who are listening to this on our recorded podcast, because we are recording this today, and this goes out on our School of Batman podcast, so we'll talk about that in a minute. We have George Clooney on the end. Okay, so let's start. Keaton, where's he going to go? Is he going to go in the middle? Is he going to go at the bottom, at the top?
Higher!
Okay.
So, are you going to go over here at the top?
Okay. Let's put West at the top then.
West at the top. Okay.
So we're going to move Keaton up somewhere around there. Second. Okay, so Keaton is going second. We'll put Clooney here in the middle, maybe. Okay, so after Keaton, who are we going to have?
Where do bat nipples go? Bat nipples
lower!
Bat nipples lower. Okay, bat nipples lower.
Is the end low enough?
Yeah.
Do we need to just move it?
Okay, so you carry on. I'm going to put
I'll take Clooney for
you can keep that for personal science. That's fine. Okay, so we're going to have Val Kilmer. Is he above Christian Bale? Lower. Okay, so Kilmer's going down here. Okay, are we happy with this order, everyone?
Affleck lower.
Who agrees with Affleck lower?
Yes.
Lower.
Oh,
give him a chance.
Oh, that was controversial. Did not expect. Okay.
I'm not happy about this.
But in science, Matt, we can't interfere with the process.
As a scientist, can I just nudge the results?
Yes. we can do that later. Yes.
That's fine.
Be happy, lovely. Okay. So, are we happy with this as our final order, everyone?
Yes.
Okay. So, at the very top, we have Adam West. Chipper West. We have Keaton, we have Christian Bale, we have Val Kilmer, we have Ben Affleck, and then the dressing room, being very inappropriate, up at that, we have Clooney bat nipples. So thanks very much to our guests and for helping us out. So yeah, we are School of Batman. So School of Batman's a podcast. We get academics on each week, and we get them to use their specific academic discipline to help Batman in a particular situation. Something's gone wrong with kidnapping, or maybe we're improving the bat suit, or something like that. And we get all kinds of disciplines. We get plant biology and linguistics, and Matt was one of our earliest guests. Matt was fiber optics, and we got on so well. We thought we would do this show.
We did a half an hour show, which 5 minutes was talking about fiber optics, and 25 minutes was arguing about Batman. So it went
very well. So the structure of this show, we're going to start off with a little bit about Batman science from the movies. We're going to go through some of the movies and talk about some of the aspects of that. And then we're going to hand over to you. So this gives you an opportunity to start thinking about what you might want to ask. So maybe you might want to ask about some particular science or a particular aspect from the movies, or you want us to come up with something that's going to help solve a problem. So maybe Joker's like kidnapping, there's been a gassing, or something like that. And you're going to give us your suggestions, and we're going to help solve them through science with Matt. We're going to start with some scripted stuff. Skip this up. So we're going to start with some of the movies. So going back, Adam West, obviously very popular in the room. 1966, this is the first real Batman movie. So I'm going to paint a picture of one of the most incredible scenes ever committed to celluloid. And that is Batman and Robin, they're chasing after a yacht, right? On the yacht. Some people already know this scene. So the people that don't, bear with me. They're chasing after a yacht. They're in a helicopter, the choppy seas. The Joker, Riddler, and everyone, they're all on the yacht. They're going to get them. So Batman, he climbs down into a ladder beneath the helicopter. Robin starts to lose control. The helicopter dips. The ladder goes into the ocean. Pulls back up. On Batman's left, there's a really big shark. Right, a really big shot. So he starts doing his back punches, back kicks, all various back moves. Fails to dislodge the shark. So he calls up to Robin. Robin, he needs his anti-shark repellent bat spray. So he's got a range of different repellent bat sprays for oceanic animals, some manta ray, barracuda, and of course he passes around the shark. Couple of sprays on the nose, and the shark falls into the sea and explodes. as sharks want to do. Now, this was widely pilloried. I think when it came out, everybody mocked it as something very, very silly. But Matt, was this so silly after all?
Well, sorry, just by show of hands, who thinks the bat repellent is a real thing? Who believe that it exists? Wow, you have such little faith in science.
Yeah.
So this was I think it was 1964.
66.
The first bat repellent for sharks was 1944. It was invented in 1944. They made it for sailors who were falling into the sea during Pacific warfare.
and being eaten by sharks. So the scientists in America invented a way of repelling sharks in water. It's a real thing that existed. They made these little discs that they would have on life jackets that would dissolve in contact with water. And when they dissolved, they gave off this smell to the sharks that they absolutely hated. And so that they would leave the sailors alone while they were stranded in water, giving them time to be rescued. Amazingly, the smell, or what they think the smell is essentially like rotting shark.
Rotting shark.
Yeah. So it turns out rotting sharks put off other sharks. They kind of don't want to find out why there's a rotting shark that just fuck off. So it's
good advice for anyone, really.
Like
you smell rotting shark, leave the area.
So yeah, so and it's not only did they invent it in 1944, it's still made and it's still a commercial product. There's companies that make shark repellent.
You go on the internet today and buy shark repellent spray.
Yes, and you need it in the middle of Edinburgh on the middle of the
day. Absolutely. So well done, Adam West, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was not so silly after all. So let's move on to another movie. And let's talk about the Batcave. So we've all seen 1989's Tim Burton Batman, the renewal of Batman in the eyes of the public as something dark and gritty and for adults, no longer the cosmic 1950s alien quasi-gay pink tentacle stuff. This was the real deal. This is Batman. And one of the most iconic images from that film is Batman kind of swooping across the Gotham skyline, his silhouette against the moon. And it was really evocative as a child and wonderful today. But as soon as he landed, this very stiff kind of cape was all squishy, and he was able to dazzle his enemies with the swishy cape. So is this science fiction, Matt? Or is this a real thing? Could you do a cape where this was a Paul Stone again in the Nolanverse?
The Nolanverse is a bit truer to real science. Although the Nolanverse is quite good because the Nolanverse kind of inspired science quite a lot. It's a bit like in Star Trek. And the cape is a sort of one of those cases where it did actually kind of do that. So people were kind of quite impressed with the idea of a cape that you could kind of wrap around yourself and suddenly goes bulletproof. Or suddenly becomes incredibly fire resistant. And so the US military put a lot of money into things that are bulletproof. And capes are weirdly no exception. There are materials that what you can just apply a little electric current and go solid, go properly like metal solid when you apply them. And they're done through sort of interweaving fabric and ferromagnetic materials such that when you apply a current, you get them to all align in exactly the same way. They're like almost Kevlar. So you do get some incredibly strong materials in the thing. They're mostly sort of fluid mixed things. You might need a cape that was sort of a sort of fluid impregnated thing. But also in the Nolanverse, he shows that these are hugely sort of tolerant to heat and things like that, which again is something they're starting to do in sort of fabric. So they're looking at fabrics where you could have a blowtorch on you and still resist the heat through these sort of very clever structures called aerogels. And they're all things that exist. In fact, aerogels you can now make during GCSE science lessons. That's how kind of simple these things are. And they something that's sort of only half a centimetre thick, you can't feel a blowtorch if you're sort of holding it in your hand. They are that good.
That's part of the exam, is it?
Yeah, that's right. If you fail, you also get a burn. That'll remember.
Very good, that's modern schooling, everyone. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the Nolanverse. I think for me, this was a wonderful moment in Batman history as a fan of the comics. Although it took a very thin slice of the comics, it's really only inspired by a few stories. This was always my Batman, the Batman from the Nolanverse. So we're going to talk about some of the items in those films. The first thing we're going to talk about, Batman Begins. If you've not seen it, again, paint a little picture. There's a young Joffrey from Game of Thrones in Batman Begins. If you don't know that, I do recommend going back and have a look because he's a very cute young boy. And not
he's
monster.
Annoying in that movie too.
He's pretty cute. You're a monster. So there's your young Joffrey and Batman. He's clinging on to the side of the building in the rain and he's trying to find some criminals. And he's got this very strange kind of bendy telescope that enables him to use it as a camera to look into a room and see what's going on. They're not in a traditional kind of telescopic way at all. So what's going on there, Matt?
So this is my expertise, because this is fiber optics. This is things that has existed for about 100 years. So bendy, flexible tubes where you can look in one end and you can snake them around 50 different corners and see something at the other end, if that's fiber optics, which you've probably heard from broadband and things like that.
And those are essentially sort of tubes about the thickness of a human hair, that where the light will bounce all the way down these little tubes of glass, and it will come out the other end of the sense it went in. So you can use those in all sorts of applications. And people here may have had things like endoscopies, which are all done with fiber optics, or even keyhole surgery, also done with fiber optics. So they are pretty common stuff. And brilliantly, because this is a scripted section, and in no way planned, I have a show about fiber optics. It's on tomorrow at 8:10.
Cross promotion, everyone. Cross promotion.
So you can come learn even more about the fact that they, I mean, Batman never used them, but they're also used to make death lasers.
It's a good sell, death lasers.
You can pump them into your brain to control them. They're amazing.
Okay, so I think we're going to our final bit, and then we're going to hand over to you. So hopefully you've got some questions or some ideas for us to work with. The final bit, we're going to talk about the Batsuit. And we could do a whole show just on the Batsuit. The Batsuit's one of the coolest pieces of tech in any film or comic. Let's just talk about maybe how the Batsuit itself, the armor, might be made. If we were making a Batsuit for Batman today, what types of technology might we use?
Again, a bit like the cape. Oddly enough, there's a lot of people spending a lot of money trying to make stuff that is bulletproof and, you know, keeps people alive while they're being shot. I think we've always wanted that. We've all wanted to be able to be superheroes and get shot and go, I can take it. So all those sort of like all that work has worked on things like ceramic materials and things like Kevlar, obviously one everybody knows, Kevlar vests and stuff. But there are now all sorts of other things. So ceramics are the big ones. Ceramics are amazing because ceramics can take almost any amount.
You're talking like plates?
Yeah, like dinner plates.
Okay.
With like nice little floral patterns on in blue. Like work,
Right, okay.
So these are like ceramics that are cooled and made with sort of structures inside them that do all sorts of shock absorbing and they change the way that when the impact force comes across, instead of the impact force coming into you, the impact force goes sideways and it ripples out into the armor. So you
disappear. Isn't that going to smash the plates though?
Oh, completely. There are ceramics that can take a certain amount of damage. There are ceramics that can survive a lot longer, but there aren't many ceramics that can heal, or you're just going to end up covered in shattered material. You need multiple layers of these things. And Batman's in the fight a long time. He can't be walking around like a shattered plate after 2 minutes. I mean, like the evil henchmen are normally the ones with guns. It's not until you get to the big henchmen that they throw the gun away and then they're like punching. So you want other materials, and there are self-healing materials now, self-healing sort of ceramic-like materials. So when it's a bit like Kevlar, when it gets hit, they're sort of liquid. The second they get hit, they become solid. They become like a non-Newtonian fluid. And when they become solid, they do the same thing.
You're going to have to explain that one, man. I'm here to keep you in check. What's a non-Newtonian fluid?
A non-Newtonian fluid? Have you ever played with cornstarch and water?
Yes.
That is a non-Newtonian fluid. When you squeeze it, when you put it on a speaker, and it kind of goes solid when you apply a force, that's a non-Newtonian fluid. And so it does the same thing. When you apply a force, you get that spread across. So the problem with things like cornstarch, it's quite heavy to walk around with a bag of cornstarch attached to your front. So modern ones
We've all been there.
Modern ones are fluids that are designed to do the exact same thing, but in just 2 millimeters, not in 5 centimeters of like a child's playing cornstarch. And they're very, very powerful. The problem with them is that they're incredibly expensive.
And using that burning stuff from earlier on.
Oh yeah, the aerogel stuff as well. A little bit of layer of that. He's going to be able to walk through fire, get shot in a minute.
So just general fashion advice, all about the letters.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Very good. So there's a lot to learn.
I mean,
from
obviously, one on top.
One on top, for style. Okay, so that's the end of our scripted section.
Yay!
Thanks very much. We're going to hand over to you, really. So, as I say, you can shout out maybe your favourite villain or a scenario, or how can we improve a piece of bat tech? You might say, how can you improve the Batarang? Or how can Batman help the Flash or some other crappy superhero be better? Or maybe you want to ask us about something from the films. Or there's loads of ideas there. So any questions from anyone to start? Any ideas? Tim?
Yes. I think Batman has a very obvious weakness, and that's the lower third of his face and the top of his neck. How can he make that act a little bit more impervious so that the next time he faces the Joker, he doesn't just slice his neck?
It's a great question, man. So we've got what I mean. Let's talk about why, I guess, he has that open first. So he needs to talk. So that's really important. So he needs to be able to talk through it, but he doesn't necessarily have to talk through his mouth. He needs to look, show his stubble to show how like pretty he is. Clean shaven, family friendly film, stubble.
Does he bleed?
That's what he needs. So those, I think those are the requirements we need to work with.
You need to get the value from the actor as well. I mean, you can't just put anyone behind the
mask. Can't just put anyone.
Yeah.
How can we help him then? What can we do there? Any ideas?
Well, I think there's probably two things we can do. We can either take this like more of like the gadgets and high tech approach, or we could kind of go down the humanities line. So I'm going to attempt to go down the humanities line, because so one thing that I think Rupert at the University did was all about, it's kind of like, you know, that sort of Darren Brown sort of mind trick magic, where they kind of get you, he gets you to kind of do things you wouldn't otherwise normally do. But what they were doing was all about how you can change your body language.
No, go on.
I'm sorry,
it's
I'm not following.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
How you can change the way you talk to people, how you change the way you move to deflect where they look and where they pay attention to you. And they said that this was sort of so powerful they could get people to essentially sort of have no idea what was hit. They had like big pieces of jewellery with sort of weird shapes on. And in the cases where they got the sort of the women involved to behave in a particular way, they managed to get them to only focus on other parts of the body. And they did it to the point where it was weird things. It was like on their wrists, they'd have another marker. And if they moved it in a particular way, people, the only thing people would remember would be this marker on their wrist. It was this really clever body language stuff, all about sort of the ways of things. How that works in the middle of a fight, I mean, Batman's amazing. He's going to take this research.
That's our like a Deus Ex Machina for the day.
Yeah.
Batman's amazing.
Yeah, I think we've managed to do the research to show that you can use body language in order to deflect people's attention away from clearly weak areas.
Yeah.
Into areas of like muscly nipples.
I like it. Yeah. Nipples.
That's what they were for.
Yeah.
Oh. Do we need to read this?
We need to read this.
Clearly,
you can keep cleaning, man. That's
I mean, how many of you talked about his chiseled jaw?
No one. Do you have a question, sir?
Yeah, sure. Can a plane in the highly aerodynamic shape of the bat symbol fly coolly against the moon, or would it instantly crash into fiery horrible death?
Right. Okay. So we're talking about. You are interested in the aerodynamics
of
it? Okay, so we've got a plane which is shaped like a bat around.
That's why are you laughing at that? That's completely reasonable.
Exactly.
That's like, reasonable. Like, that makes, I mean, man, everything is shaped like that.
This is true.
I mean, like,
always branding.
You know,
so what's the aerodynamics?
Even
like?
The body language he was doing was weirdly in the shape of a bat somehow. So everything is matching to this. So with aerodynamics, the aerodynamics is mostly about thrust, it's about power. And so that bat shape may have been. Sorry. Do you want to make any actions for
it? You're the straight man, I've got to do something.
You're going to fall into topic.
Yeah, okay. Okay, it's not thrust, right?
So you can make lots of things fly, you just need to have a huge engine on the back of it to make it, to give it that forward momentum to get it off the ground. So what he's probably
hang on, hang on. So the shape is almost irrelevant.
No, because you have to have a wing shape. You have to create the change in air pressure.
Right.
So, but you can have a terrible wing. You can have a wing that's just an awful shape to fly with. But provided it still makes the air pressure difference, why don't you got the thrust?
Right.
To kind of get over the fact that
it's like have a box with like two kind of. Like Twix packets on the side.
It's a regular box with a bat symbol.
Yeah. Yeah. And as long as I had sufficient.
Pretty much. And then after that, you've got the fact that the box is more aerodynamic.
Right.
So you then need to control this thing.
Okay.
So again, you've got two things. Either Bruce Wayne is incredible. Bruce Wayne is incredible.
He told us not to say anything.
He's incredibly rich. So he could buy like a crazy computer that would kind of do it all for him. Or he's Batman. He can clearly control a bat-shaped aeroplane, which has like a Saturn V rocket on the back trying to power it through the skies. This seems like completely possible. But it could fly. People have flown more bonkers shapes than bats. And people are flying, there's all sorts of things like the Skunk Works in America of like their weird plane shapes. A lot of those plane shapes back in like the 50s and 60s, they did them because they thought they looked like planes. They didn't do them because they had like clever modeling that said they'd be brilliant planes. They did them. There's like delta planes with weird bits cut out of them. And they built them. They spent millions building them. They try and fly them, and they realize they were using like an entire oil field to get them half off the ground. I go, oh, crap, this is a terrible idea. But Batman doesn't have that problem. He can just keep buying the oil fields.
Okay, thanks. So, have we got any other thoughts or any ideas that you would like us to explore? Are you, sir?
So when, in one of the early films, he was fighting the mind-controlled penguins.
Mind-controlled penguins, okay.
So was doing
that. I've actually got something to say on this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just pretty face. Right here. So, mind-controlled penguins, you're going to have to step in when it gets hard in a moment. But I was at a science thing once, and I saw some cyborg cockroaches, right? So these little cockroaches, they had electrodes in them, and you had an app. And you can buy these on the internet. You can go away and have a look at this. I promise this is a real thing. And you can buy cockroaches and the kit to do it, and you can control the direction of the cockroaches with your app on your phone, living, moving cockroaches, because you're manipulating with electricity their sense of their world around them. Is that a similar idea to what the penguin would have done?
Well, that's basically what is happening in the movie.
Right.
So they are,
okay.
They are basically...
Yeah. Hey. I've done one.
I feel like...
You elaborate now, I'm taking it.
No, before I elaborate, I feel like I need to say, don't buy a penguin and try it.
No.
Please don't.
No. The shipping's a nightmare as well.
So, but yeah, I mean, like, so that, there has been not just electrochemically, but people have done things with understanding how brains work. Understanding how brains work is hard science, because if you just look at a brain under an MRI or something like that, they kind of look like they make no sense. So the easiest way to understand how brains work is to get a brain and apply normally electricity and see what the brain then does. You apply electricity to the brain of a small animal. I'm not very vivisection, I'm just explaining what happens. You see if its leg twitches, or you see if it becomes hungry, or if you see if it starts complaining that everything smells like green. And it's how you do that, a lot of that neuroscience stuff. And with things like mind control penguins, the way that you can get animals to do those things is by delivering triggers. You're delivering neurotransmitters, or you're delivering sort of microelectric pulses. But they are...
They're wearing those little hats.
Exactly, yeah. So it's got to be brain pulses.
Like electric separate thing.
Yeah. They're not like, it's not like the Riddler. They're not like big tanks of green above their heads.
No.
So, you know, it's got to be electricity. And in which case, brains are really delicate. And brains respond to those tiny, really complicated pulses. It's not just a case of getting a 9-volt battery and going and getting the penguin to recite Shakespeare. So those are really easy things to interrupt. So you wouldn't need much sort of like EM or even just like a 9-volt battery that would just completely interfere with whatever that communication was with the penguin's part of the brain. It would release it from its mind control state and the sort of the electric.
So this is how Batman could stop the penguins attacking it.
He could have just been there with a 9-volt battery going. They're basically solved.
Wow, that would have been dramatic.
It would have been a different movie.
All right. Yeah,
I mean, like, I don't think this is a show that's necessarily where we make the movies more exciting.
No, we make them far more dark.
Although, you know, if people have any villains for us, I can come up with some very exciting science to defeat them.
Yeah, so, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be Batman villains, but ideally Batman villains. Have you got a favourite Batman villain? Oh, you're
keen there, sir.
I've got this one.
Can science explain Halle Berry as Catwoman?
Oh, okay. So we have to probably define the question a bit before we answer it. So when you say how can they explain, are you talking about the casting of, or how she?
All of it.
Chris, I've got this.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, take it away.
So movies cost money. And people like making money. And money funds research. So I know about this very well. And Halle Berry was cast to make money. That was literally it. That is the sole reason Halle Berry was cast as Catwoman.
Like
the science of it was essentially marketing science. Of which there is huge amounts of science, it's just mostly bollocks.
Do you agree with the theory that in the original Batman, Catwoman was suffering from a traumatic head trauma that caused change in her behaviour?
Actually, you don't even need a head trauma for Catwoman. So Catwoman, by the nature of the fact that she's a Catwoman, it kind of might explain why she behaves like she does. So how many people here have ever heard of toxoplasmosis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, toxoplasmosis is a little parasite that's carried by cats that's in something astonishing, like 60% of cat owners. And it makes people who own cats.
Any cat owners in the room before we go ahead? Well, okay, so this one we need to be careful.
Yeah. Well, I own cats as a kid, and it makes people who have owned cats risk averse, more likely to come and stand on stage and do stupid stuff.
Very specific.
Yeah. Very specific. It has been frequently shown that people who have this toxoplasmosis do high risk activities. They like to go skydiving, they like to jump off buildings, they like to go and do things that otherwise they wouldn't normally do. And people who have had the parasite and then had it have been shown to have quite large personality changes. So while Catwoman seems an extreme case, maybe she was already a bit into leather and the toxoplasmosis just pushed it that
bit. Okay, so when the cats started licking and eating her,
might have been before.
Right, okay. Alright, so does that answer your question, sir? You're happy with that? Okay. So yeah, we were talking about villains maybe, or other superheroes. Any villains you want from you?
Yeah,
I love the joke about the scars. So could you approach this one maybe from like a physics perspective?
Well, the joke you're getting scars in chemistry.
Oh, chemistry.
Do you not remember? Do you not know the joke origin story?
Well, which one? That's the answer. I mean, can they all exist at the same time?
I'm asking the audience this. I am right in thinking all of the joke origin stories are man fall into bat.
Yes.
Yeah, that is bat.
No.
Well,
because he had his wife, and he was trying to appease. She had the scars, and then we had that there. And then he also had his dad, who was a drinker. Okay, so can cause, I guess.
Do you want to solve alcoholism?
yeah, you could. This is a scientist, right?
Bear in mind, it has to be Batman solves alcoholism.
Yes,
right.
Alcohol sounds great.
Yeah.
an alcohol solving batarang. Is that what you're asking me for?
Yes, please. How can that be?
Well, you've asked now. I mean, I will come back to the joke today because I realise we've got massively sidetracked. Right, so Batman solves alcoholism.
Yes.
I'm on this.
Using bat stuff. So
bat
it has
stuff.
To be bat branded, whatever you say.
Bat branded.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's fine. Right, so Batman has in the past, in all of his adventures, he's got all these batarangs he's had. Are you just cracking up because I'm fat jealous of this? Okay. So, one thing he has also done is he has cured people of things like scarecrow's venom and stuff. Quick injection stuff.
Oh, there's synergy there, isn't
there? Yeah. What I'm trying to get to is Batman's not averse to injecting people with shit. Because we're going to need to inject some people with some shit. So one of the things that is a treatment for alcoholism that is not that commonly used, because most people, you know, you try and do it with therapy and it's all about, you know, self-involvement, so it's a really good way of doing it, but it's a bit hard to get Batman to sit around with a group therapy. And that's not very Batman-esque, to sit around and talk about feelings. So we're going to go with the other route. And the other route is there's a particular chemical that you can inject people with. And it gives people nausea if they smell ethanol. Like, incredibly bad.
And ethanol is a type of
alcohol.
Right. Not for me! I'm doing it! They're clever. I'm trying to help you guys. Jesus.
So, essentially, as soon as you smell alcohol, you become incredibly nauseous, like throwing up nauseous. And it is one of the most extreme drinks of alcoholism. And people who are on the verge of death through alcoholism will sometimes be given this treatment. And it makes it so they can barely think about it without being given just crippling nausea. And so, and it lasts for months, this thing. So it's really kind of like strong sort of chemistry that does this.
Can we weaponize that to like a battle?
But Batman doesn't, because it's weapons, they're tools.
Sorry, tools. We could tool-ize that.
The injection that Batman is giving people against their will is a tool.
It's a tool. Okay.
So
he can run around and hey, but it's bah, 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 and then everyone will be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, he's certainly broken into an AA meeting. This is not sounding very bad. I'd like to think it's a villain, the alcoholic, who's a villain.
Yeah, alcohol is the real villain.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That's my solution, my bat tool for solving alcoholism.
I'm going to give you a round of applause for that.
I don't get no evidence. So But we should we go back to the vote?
Yes.
So which one am I solving?
Oh, okay. So what are we even trying to solve here? We want to know how he got the scars. I think it's a play on the idea of
we should go back and ask. So what what would we like solve? Which one's your Bob is a company domain now. That's the bad one for me.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with that one. They are going to explore an official canon origin soon in the comics.
Well, oh, brilliant. They've never done that.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad we're getting another Joker Orange story. All I want now is another Batman origin story, because I've never seen that either.
No, they've never been put to film.
Sorry, we're getting massively sidetracked.
We are. I guess the answer is which one is the true one. I think we're going to go for
the Vat of Chemicals. Would you like to know how it works?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many different chemical glass that do so many weird, different disfiguring things. I mean, hard to choose one specifically. Instead, I will give you an anecdote from like a big chemical processing plant. It's not one about getting scars, it's just it's quite fun. When you make a lot of chemicals, genuinely, big chemical synthesis does happen in huge open vats. It genuinely does. You can go visit some of these, particularly in China, and they are football fields and football fields are open chemical vats where stuff is either bubbling or stuff is evaporating and drying out and stuff like this. So it's genuinely possible that someone could be walking around a gantry and could have fallen in. So it could have happened. But there's one case where, has everyone seen copper sulfate back at school? Blue stuff? Blue crystals? There was a company used to make copper sulfate, and they were the bluest copper sulfate. They had the most amazing copper sulfate in the world. It was so blue, they didn't know why. And then it stopped being blue, and they didn't know why. And they checked all the CCTV footage, and it turned out security guards were peeing in the tank.
that stopped it, or that was what made it blue?
That's what made it blue.
I like that. That's great. Okay.
Random aside.
Cool. Okay, so let's have something else then from you. So maybe, as I said, give us another favourite villain.
Superman. Not in a rubbish way that we've had already.
Oh, okay. So we're basically being asked to script Doctor Batman versus Superman.
Okay,
so how is he going to take down Superman? So just everyone familiar with Superman, we don't need to explain who Superman is. Yeah, okay, nothing good. Yeah, okay. So what's the tools that he's going to use? So we got maybe the old laser eyes. How's he going to take down laser eyes?
Well, we did this in the podcast. Which how many people have actually listened to the podcast who are here?
Yeah,
a few. You're going to hear this again. So the problem with like Superman in movies and Superman comics, the way he's taken down, is almost always bloody kryptonite. Even when it was invented, it was like this MacGuffin weapon to take down Superman because he was massively overpowered. And I feel like even in like the really good comic of Batman vs Superman, there's still a lot of kryptonite involved in that battle. But I think Batman could do better. I think Batman can have better tools at his disposal to take down Superman. And I would say this because it's my specialty, but I think fiber optics are an answer. The way it could work is fiber optics are amazing at taking light and taking it round corners and somewhere else. But they're amazing at taking huge powers of light. So they're used in fusion reactors. The ITER fusion reactor uses fiber optics to direct kilowatts and kilowatts, megawatts of power in lasers into tiny little particles. And I think what you need there is you need Batman to have a suit which has fiber optics going from one fist to the other fist. And then what you need is you need Batman to basically goad a mind-controlled or just slightly miffed Superman into
I don't think anybody knows what their beef was in the film, really. He was angry, he was a bit angry, I don't know.
Angry, he thought they had different named mothers and same name. That was fine.
So let's assume Superman thinks
they're different
named
mothers.
Yeah. So that's okay, it's fine.
What you need to do is... you need to get him into using his laser vision. And then all Batman needs to do is put his fist in the way of the laser. Because what will happen is the fiber optics will be the way to couple that laser vision down into the fiber optics. And then once it's in the fiber optics, it's totally internally reflected. It can't escape. So all that energy doesn't like end up in Batman's suit. It doesn't like cook him or anything like that. It just simply goes from one fist to the other fist. So what Batman has then just been armed with is a fucking laser fist.
Laser fist. Right, laser fist. We've got to have a villain called Laser Fist or a hero. I don't care. I want to see it.
So in that way, he is instantly able to just knock Superman out with his own laser vision
and give him a shave. There's a real Superman fans, they know that. I'll just leave that hanging. Okay, wonderful. I think, yeah, very good, very good. So we're actually on our last story now, and I've got one that I prepared earlier. Yeah, I've got one I prepared earlier, I've got a little script. And I've got some music to do it to really set the scene, so.
Yeah.
So, frustrated with some of the recent upgrades to the Batsuit, Bruce literally goes back to the drawing board and takes a very different approach. The heads-up display is overwhelming, and as someone who is the Knight, he needs every improvement to working in darkness he can get. Looking over some of the latest innovations from Wayne Tech in seemingly unrelated areas, the world's greatest detective begins to piece together a selection of technologies that grant seemingly superhuman sensory capabilities. How can he succeed? Whoa, dramatic.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm asking for you here. So, a lot of people think, you know, heads-up displays is the way to go, but that's very, very overwhelming. People very quickly get overwhelmed by too much visual information.
I know what other words, but
right. Yeah, no, there isn't. Don't look it up. So he's working in complete darkness often to take people down. He needs to be able to like hear and position and like feel things. So we're talking about maybe some kind of sensory substitution or being able to hear in 3D sound and accurately get distances or things like that. You with me what I'm going for?
Yeah,
this is what I'm after. Okay, so
you're asking about bat location sounds.
Bat location, but also how is he going to be able to translate that into something that he can understand? Yeah? Okay, you understand the question?
Yeah.
Okay,
many of this was scripted earlier.
You've broken the illusion of the stage! Never work with scientists before. That's lesson number one. Okay, yes, scripted earlier, go on.
So I proved earlier that I kind of suck at the sound stuff anyway. I mean, like, I can't even work out how the mobile phones work to create, like, but Nolan-esque 3D maps of buildings. So I think you probably need a different scientist to do 3D sound stuff. You need someone who's better than me. Basically.
Right. You mean like the scientist we have on next week's School of Batman podcast, where this very story... Smooth, right? Yeah? Yeah. So if you want to know the answer to that question, next week, iTunes, all of your favourite podcast apps, School of Batman, where we're going to have Lorenzo Piccinelli, and where he's going to do some really cool like 3D audio, and we're going to talk about sensory substitution, about the idea of taking new inputs and feeling them, and being able to go beyond sense and sight and sound, and be able to locate things in complete darkness. It's going to be available for free on all your favourite podcast apps, School of Batman. You can also find us on Twitter, and that is the end of our show, School of Batman on Twitter. If you follow us on Twitter, we'll give you a free sticker for coming and saying, yeah, thanks very much. We'll post one out to you. And that's us, so thanks very much. Yay!